put on my slippers, I walked in the kitchen and died. And oh, what a feeling when my soul went through the ceiling and on up into heaven I did ride. When I got there, they did say, John, it happened this way. You slipped upon the floor and hit your head. And all the angels say, just before you passed away, that these were the very last words that you said. Please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. No, I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane, the blind can have my eyes, and the deaf can take hold of my ears if they don't mind the size. To get my stomach to Milwaukee if they run out of beer, I put my socks in a cedar box just to get them out of here. A Venus de Milo could have my arms. Look out, I got your nose. Sell my heart to the junk man and give my love to Rose. But please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane, the blind could have my eyes, and the deaf could take both of my ears if they don't mind the size. Oh man.
When we're living in the White House and debating on the Hill, of all your crazy antics, we'll all have had our fill. We'll be closing down munitions plants and Old Glory will be furled. Cause we don't want your big machines, we just want the world. And a bill will be proposed, section number one. We're shutting down the oil rigs and turning towards the sun. The air will be clean for all the boys and girls, cause we don't want your oil tankers, we just want the world. Face the executioner, shut the logging camps all down, get busy planting hemp, leave the trees there in the ground. Life is too precious on this little spinning pearl, cause we don't want your bulldozers, we just want the world.
We are joined now by Scott Crowe out of Texas. He is a longtime anarchist organizer, author of a number of books, including Black Flags and Windmills, Emergency Hearts, Molotov Dreams, Setting Sights, which is about community self-defense. Scott, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me on again.
And right now we're seeing a huge influx of mutual aid groups springing up across the country. If you look at the map that the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, has put together on their website of all of these different mutual aid groups around the country, you'll see hundreds starting up in cities and towns. And I wonder if you can talk about mutual aid as an aspect of what people might not realize, that it is connected to a tradition of anarchism and people working outside of the hierarchical systems.
Well, you know, mutual aid at its root really is just cooperation between people. It's just a fancy word that anarchists took at some point 100-something years ago and said, hey, we're going to call it mutual aid, because if my world and your world are intertwined in some way, even if we don't know what that is, that's cooperate. That's basically, and we work together towards things for the common good, even if it's not the larger things, even if it's just some immediate thing, that's basic cooperation. If you're just helping your neighbor because you want to, because you have feelings to help them and things, that's cooperation, which we call mutual aid. And anarchists in particular, or those tendencies, those ideas, have this other form of mutual aid, which is like this liberatory opening with mutual aid, which is the idea that it's more than cooperation. It's cooperation that meets people where they're at in the solidarity framing, not just the idea that I'm helping you in a charity way because I have resources and you don't have them, but because I recognize that, our worlds are intertwined together, even if it's just for that immediate thing, and that it creates this liberatory potential for communities to begin to make themselves autonomous and networked. And instead of being afraid that I'm in this alone and that the zombie apocalypse is happening or a disaster has struck down everything that I know and I must stockpile toilet paper and guns and think about all this stuff that's me, mutual aid challenges us to actually look outside of that and to go like, how is my neighbor doing? How are my friends doing? How's my family doing? How are these people that I don't know who are marginalized in society every day, how are they doing? And what can we do to work together to make them have autonomy on their terms and us to have autonomy on our terms? And so with that, you create an opening, and that opening is that it can be self-interested, like, right, so I will pick the communities that I have chosen to be in, but it also is altruistic at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive to each other, which is to say that I want to help you. I want to be a part of you building your autonomy and your safety and security. And I've talked in abstracts, and you're like, what is that? It's the basic stuff: food security, healthcare, education, culture, just the basic, you know, security in general. How do we want to organize ourselves? So there's really two giant models. There's one, you rely on governments, large NGOs and nonprofits, and you just take whatever they give, even if they fail you over and over and over again, or your community. Or you say, I'm gonna let those exist, but I want to have more autonomy and control over my life and the lives of the people that are around me, not control over them, but with them, so you can do that. And this is the reason I'm talking about this is because this is the way we approached it after Hurricane Katrina. And it started, and a liberatory aspect of mutual aid starts with this very simple, easy idea. You ask the people that you want to help or that you think need help what they need and how you can help them, because then you don't have to guess what you think that they want, or you have to presuppose all of your ideas onto that. You can ask them, and it starts with a really easy question. And you know, like, and after Hurricane Katrina, we built this organization called the Common Ground Collective, and it was more like a vessel. It was sort of an organization, sort of a network. It was kind of broad, but we did two things within that. We used dual power, which is the idea that you resist oppression and exploitation on one hand, but at the same time, we wanted to build. So we wanted to stop the police and white militias from killing people and making sure that people were, search and rescue were happening to people who were being left out of the equation. But at the same time, we wanted to build clinics and free schools and all of these things that in the Katrina disaster had already been happening to these communities for decades before, which was to build like localized autonomy, really, basically. And so we started with that, and we named it Solidarity, Not Charity. I didn't name it that, but somebody brought that as a phrase. And so that's kind of how that started. So these ideas can take effect. And the other piece, I think, to add to this, I'm sorry, I'm going to back up for 1 second. The piece I wanted to say is, how did we start doing all that? Simply by asking the people in those communities what they needed. And that's how we started. We just said, what can we do in this major disaster that is bigger than any of us, that we could never even think about on the scale of, what is it we can do? And I thought it was going to be this very complex political answer from the people who were gathered there, because it was just a community of people. And one woman said, hey, can you just get the rotting trash off the street down the block so that we can stop the health hazard? And I was like, that's it? That's the beginning? We can do that. And so we started doing it right then, without masks and gloves and all the things that, you know, like, because we're in the middle of a major disaster. And that's how it started. And then we just started to approach each thing that direction by asking and figuring out what was needed and asking people if that's what they need. Because every community is not the same. Every community doesn't need the exact same thing to help themselves. Many communities need some similar pieces, but some need more immediate help. And so an example of that was, like, you go to some communities, they need medical help. So that's what we'd begin to do. We'd do medical help. Other communities needed to be fed in the immediate disaster, and so they were getting food. Other people, later as it was going, their kids were just running around because all the schools were closed for another, we didn't know they were going to be closed for another year or 2 years. So we started free schools. And again, this was just bit by bit. People like you, people like me, who just said, hey, we want to do this because it's the right thing to do. Is that the kind of stuff you want?
After Hurricane Katrina in 2005, there was this moment, kind of an opening, where the capitalist systems broke down, the NGOs broke down, people were left desperate, without any access to resources, and anarchists came in, among others, people just wanting to help, and took on this idea of solidarity, not charity, and addressing the needs of the people. That worked a bit, and then capitalism came back with a vengeance. This backlash and the privatization of the schools in New Orleans, the privatization of the yes. public housing projects, how is that something that we can avoid when we look at this month that we're in right now? Is this just going to be a blip in the radar where then there is a backlash where the capitalist system really crushes down hard again, or is there a way to make this more long-lasting?
Both at the same time. Yes, capitalism is going to bounce back quickly, and you know, many people are going to be swept under the rug and forgotten about, and while others are going to receive benefits and support and stuff, and then some people are going to benefit greatly from this. That's totally true. And what you said in New Orleans is absolutely true. That opening, that crack in history, as the Zapatistas call it, is what we opened after Katrina to see what people could do. But it's hard because no matter what we are building at this point, in your community or in your neighborhood or with whoever you're doing it with, it's just going to be temporary autonomy because we are under resourced, and resources being time, money, and people, really. You know, Common Ground, for instance, in the first 2 years raised $3 million to build clinics and free schools and do all of this stuff. But we tried to rebuild civil society from the ground up, neighborhood by neighborhood. And it would take billions and billions of dollars to do that. So we didn't have that, and we weren't trying to raise that kind of money to do something. We were just trying to meet the basic needs at first, and then trying to build to those second steps made it much more difficult because capital does come in to do that. And so we're always going to have that tension. But what I do know, and I don't foretell the future, but climate change and disasters of all kinds, whether it's ecological, economic, political, or war, will continue, and then will affect people around the world in different ways. And as we are all affected by the pandemic now, maybe we just build small things at where we are, helping our friends and stuff, but thinking towards the future, how we build this autonomy for the next disaster. Because, you know, you think this is the last pandemic. No, this is not the last pandemic that we're probably going to see. So let's build for the next one. Or, and you know, like if you're in a region where you suffer from hurricanes or fires, I mean, not hurricanes, fires, or earthquakes. I mean, these things will continue. They're not going to go away. And so if communities begin to think towards the future with this liberatory approach to it, I believe that we can build autonomy and still stay within the capitalist system. It's not prefigurative politics, because I'm not trying to say that, because I think it's always fits and starts and it's messy. But if Common Ground in New Orleans hadn't built what we had, building on movements that had come before us, right? Because the basic ideas that I wrote for the whole thing were this: what did the Black Panther Party do? They built survival programs pending revolution. They were not anarchists in any way. They were a top-down hierarchical party. But they knew that people's basic needs needed to be met before they could even think about liberating themselves on their own terms. I looked at the Spanish anarchists of the 30s, because they were under a war. I mean, they were attacked by fascists on both sides, whether it was communists or the actual fascists. They were attacked on both sides, and they built all these mutual aid societies within that they had been building for decades before that, and were able to use them. And then I also looked to the Zapatistas in Chiapas, Mexico. Again, they don't say that they're anarchists. They have liberatory ideas, but they have created autonomy for themselves in this region for 35 years with international mutual aid to take care of their basic health care, education, and all of these things. And if you want a liberatory approach, there are far more challenges in it too, because it's not just what you're going to do outside with everybody else, but how do you organize it internally with each other? Because you want to challenge the dominant narratives, the dominant hierarchies that we have. Like, I think that these are liberatory approaches on both sides of this. And I think that if Common Ground hadn't taken those ideas and remixed them into that you wouldn't have had Occupy. You wouldn't have had Occupy Sandy. You wouldn't have these mutual aid movements moving from a liberatory framework. I mean, we basically were able, that was our piece to add to history, was to add this part to, like, maybe we need this because things are unstable now. And whether people take it or not, or there's unintended outcomes, consequences, and impacts, that's all true. But we're only taking baby steps in the last 15 years, you know. And I think that we need those, and we need more and more baby steps everywhere. And having this conversation is one of those steps towards that, because it's not the usual activist models of, like, we're going to resist power and try to demand something. It says we are going to create our own power and build our own things within whatever we think society will be. And it's not just like a political framing of anarchists, but whatever those communities, whatever those things mean to each other. And if I could just say for one thing, is that what I'm talking about doing is, like, take some basic foundation elements, some fundamental elements of liberation, and then just remix them for your community. So a comparison would be like a forest. Like, a forest from outer space looks the same no matter what continent you're on or what part of a continent you're on. But if you look at it close, a forest on the northwest coast is totally different than a Sonoran desert forest in the southwestern United States. They're totally different, but they have similar elements that make them up, that cross all over the planet. Well, that's what I'm saying for this, for mutual aid, for building a liberatory set of ideas that are the foundations, and then you just pick whatever makes sense for you and your communities, or the organizations or the projects that you're working on, thinking towards the future.
So, say someone is organizing in their community or trying to maybe connect with their local mutual aid group here in Portland. It's called COVID-19 Mutual Aid, PDX COVID-19 Mutual Aid. There's a Facebook group. There are people organizing online to maybe bring groceries to people who need them, go and pick up medicines, help out their neighbors. What are these next steps? How do people take that to a next level and build something that is actually a longer-lasting alternative to the system that we have, especially at a time when so many people are now facing unemployment for the first time and not being able to meet their basic needs?
Well, I think you present a lot of challenges that I don't have the answers to. And understand, I don't have the answers to any of this. All I'm saying is, here's some other paths that we might look at. I want to be very clear about that. Because I don't have the answers to this stuff. I don't have any prescient information or anything. And but what you just described is the Band-Aid stuff that we need. It's the service work that needs to happen right now. But then the question is, I would say, well, if you're going to deliver food, and you don't want to be in this position again, because then you're still having to go to the grocery stores, well, how do you create food security? How do you start growing gardens in your own backyard? You have community gardens. You have food, you make sure that food for your communities, whatever that is, whether it's geographic or identity or whatever it is, that you guys provide for yourself. But you do that across everything. Instead of just providing medicines you're having to go get at a pharmacy, we run our own pharmacies. We begin to have first aid stations that become clinics. We have clinics that become hospitals. We begin to figure out, how do we need to meet our needs, whatever that is, on small scales that are doable, that don't become giant nonprofit organizations or unwieldy networks that are just too big to do anything in. And so I know this sounds like abstracts, but if you're delivering medicine, well, who amongst you is a healthcare professional that's willing to check people to do things? And I'm saying that not everybody needs to lean into the fire. You know, some people need to stand next to the fire, and other people just need to support all of those people. And this is how it all works together. It's not that everybody has to be on the front lines of doing anything. It's just that if we work together, then you have stronger networks where people can meet their needs and help others meet their needs where they're at.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. I mean, every time people come together outside of the system, similar things start happening. Like I saw it 20 years ago now after the so-called battle in Seattle, the organizing of the global justice movement, when people gathered in convergences to oppose global trade deals in different cities around the country. Every time people got together, there was a medic tent, there was a legal tent, there were people organizing indie media, independent media, all of these things were happening. And the Occupy movement then had a very similar look and feel in 2010. And how is it that these things keep recurring? And how, I mean, is this the natural way for humans to organize that we're just coming back to when we don't have the systems of structure and control?
Well, I think there's two pieces in that. I do think that there's always pockets that will always do this. But those networks that you just named from the alternative globalization movement were critical for what Common Ground did and helped inform the whole idea, because we had these networks of street medics that we all were networked with. We had these legal teams. We had these independent media, which we called indie media at the time, right? We had all these networks to draw on. So those existed, and they all come in an anarchist, they were all under the rubric of anarchism. Whether you called it that or not does not matter, but that's the total truth. And the reason that it continues is because because after Katrina, people saw the sheer nakedness, a whole generation saw the sheer nakedness of government failure, the disaster within a disaster. And we also, Common Ground, as you remember, we had 28,000, 30,000 people come through, and everybody went back to their communities with these ideas to different degrees, and so they just continued them. And then I think also, like I would have to say that there's been a lot of writings on it. There's been books about it. So there's things that have continued the ideas and have said that this is an important development in anarchist ideas, especially within the context of the United States, and I would say even Europe and Canada. I can't speak to everywhere, but it also it seems in Mexico also. And then what I found out was that this stuff resonated all around the world because everybody was doing it at different degrees. And so we have added now to the anarchist canon, I guess, if you want to call it that, or whatever it is. I don't know what you call that stuff, to the liberatory sets of ideas, this whole idea of liberatory mutual aid. And that is a newer piece. I'm not saying it never existed before, but it's a newer piece thought about consciously for a whole new generations of people. And I think that it resonates, and I think, so then you have Haiti, and you have Indonesia, and then you have Occupy, and by the time Occupy comes to shore from the economic collapse, that disaster, that there's a lot of people, hundreds of thousands of people participating in that, and now they're going back to their communities and taking that also. And so now you just have the spread of ideas, which is the way liberatory ideas should spread. There's no top-down somebody telling you how it's going to be or this is the way to do it, because it makes sense. Somebody presented the ideas, you heard them, or you saw them in action, and you're like, okay, let's give it a try. But until we do that, then it's just conjecture, you know? And so now we have it. We have examples. We can see it. Even if it fails or that opening closes, it's still going to be needed and always going to reopen over and over again. Can it be sustainable? Can we institutionalize these ideas without becoming, bureaucracies and hierarchies ourselves? Those are the questions that I think communities will have to ask themselves.
Well, is anarchism a Western European American idea that people can live without government and organize, self-organize in their communities, or does this idea originate elsewhere? I mean, if it is a European idea, is the spread of it then a new form of colonialism, or is it something different?
Well, anarchism, anything that has an ism becomes an ideology is a problem. I would be promoting anarchy, which is just a liberatory set of ideas and practices. Anarchism, yeah, definitely comes out of a Western European chauvinistic, male-dominated thing. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have good elements to it. But just take the ism out of it, and you have anarchy, which those ideas have been around since humans have been organizing with each other, have been working together on stuff. I think we just named it. I think different communities name it different things. The Zapatistas would never use the word anarchism or socialism for what they do. They call it Zapatismo, as a matter of fact, you know. And it's okay because those words are just placeholders so we can have conversations to think about these sets of ideas or the way these practices could manifest themselves. And I think that we need to be careful about that. That's one thing that I am not a proponent for, is trying to push your ideology. Like, I'm a socialist and we're socialist and we're only doing this to help you so we can liberate you. Well, that's still the colonial mentality. That's an ism, right? Or anarchists doing the same thing. But if I come to you and I just say, look, man, I care about you. We as an organization care about you. And then we just start working together. And then later you find out that I subscribe to these sets of ideas I call anarchy. Well, that's fine. You know, you subscribe to a set of ideas that I might not always agree with or understand either. But at least we have some common ground and we have some ideas in the liberatory mutual approach to it.
Yes, and I wonder, like, how people engaged in this kind of work right now at this time can avoid the saviorism or the idea that that the able-bodied right now are having to help the disabled as opposed to us working in this mutual liberation together.
Well, I think it's just the approach. If you are engaged, if your emergency heart, which is this beautiful thing that's inside of us that drives us towards passion and compassion to help the greater world, if your emergency heart is kicked in, but then you begin to approach things from this idea that I've got resources, I'm going to save you, well, then you've already monkeyed up the machine. So you got to back up from that and go to say, I may have more resources than you, and I'm going to ask you what you need, but then I'm going to approach it that there's some benefit for both of us in this happening. And this can happen in all unequal situations if you want it to. And so it might mean approaching things more humbly, but definitely not with something like, I have all the information, because you don't. I don't. Nobody does. But this is our pieces of the truth, and I have these experiences that may help you. And then you may have experiences that will help me also. And I'm talking about this in personal terms, but this is scalable stuff. This can happen across communities that don't necessarily overlap with each other. We saw it after Hurricane Katrina, because, you know, we'd go into, say, ostensibly some community, but that's not true, because it was multiple overlapping communities. Any community you went into could be street sex workers, could be trans people, could be homeowners, could be house renters, could be homeless people. All of this could be one geographic area, church leaders, you know, all within the same three or five blocks of each other. And I think that approaching it with curiosity and humbleness, not just individually, but as organizations, is the step towards that. That doesn't mean that you give up all the power that you have. You recognize that you have skill sets and resources and things, but you also recognize that there's things for you to learn along the way. And I think that this is not semantics. It begins to open up different possibilities.
That's what we're facing right now, is the world of possibilities that are opening up at a time when the system itself is failing. Scott Crow, I want to thank you for joining us on KBOO today and speaking with us about this idea of this COVID-19 crisis being not just a crisis or a disaster, but an opening to thinking about things differently and to approaching our world differently. And I wonder if you have any final thoughts on that.
Well, yeah. Remember this. This is the stock phrase. It's easy. Resist, rebel, create, and build. And that's how we're all going to get there together.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Scott Crow. His website, scottcrow.org. He is an anarchist organizer, and activist who has been doing this work for decades and is the author of a number of books and one of the founders of the Common Ground Collective in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Thanks for being with us, Scott, on KBOO today.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
This is Danka Soderberg with KBOO Radio. Wide awake, the fever burns, sweat it out, lay my turn. Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming. All this doubt is creeping in, inside out.
My feeling. Get love when I've only been stealing. Can't let time keep passing me by. Run down what I've always been chasing. Black out every fear I've been facing.
There it is, the music from Ennio Morricone and The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. This is DK Holm. I'm here with Mona Bowen and Hi. Just Jess.
Hello.
And this is the debut show of Film at 11, which is going to be our weekly movie review wrap-up.
Yes, we'll be having a panel reviewing the latest films from the multiplex to the art houses to the Northwest Film Center, as well as streaming films. We'll have occasional shows that are special for seasonal and current event content. Our show is unique to the Portland area and to our knowledge, but it will also conform with the program charter as an arts service. So thanks for inviting me.
Yes, and just to do a little announcing, at 10:30 today is Sprouts, which features an interview with Grammy Award-winning native artist Dawn Avery. And then at 11 o'clock, it's Pacific Underground, where Asian and Pacific Islander Americans take the mic into their own hands. And all, of course, is made possible by members' support. So perhaps we should introduce ourselves to the good people out there, Mona.
I guess that means I'm going to start. Okay. Apparently, I don't know how mic works either, so here we go.